Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome back to News and Views. The state Medicaid program faces a $140 million budget shortfall, and state lawmakers have yet to address it. That's causing serious concern in the disability community about the potential loss of services that could force thousands of people out of their homes and into institutions, which would cost the state more in the long run. Here to talk about it is Julia Adams with the ARC of North Carolina.
Well, Julia, thanks for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
One of the big issues facing our state, our legislature now, is a $150 million or so shortfall in Medicaid, which is a very important program to people with disabilities.
Yes, it is.
What are your concerns now about that program, and what should we do?
I think one of the biggest concerns that we have is that we've been having a continued gap in Medicaid in each consecutive budget. We really need to start addressing the fact that, specifically for the people that I lobby for, individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, Medicaid is their lifeline. Medicaid provides both their health benefits to them so that they can get to see a primary care physician. It also, in our state, through a Medicaid waiver program, provides long-term supports. These two things in conjunction are what keeps individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities out of our state institutions. So when we're looking at a very big gap in our Medicaid budget, we have been urging, and the ARC of North Carolina actually drafted a letter to both the leadership in the House and the Senate, as well as to the governor, that you have got to prioritize this gap and you need to find ways to shore up this gap so that we don't have families going into crisis all over our state.
When you say long-term supports for folks who are listening, what does that mean? What sort of things does Medicaid help with folks so they can stay out of institutions?
Well, through what we call the 1915C waiver, which is a Medicaid term, most of us know it in the community as the Community Alternatives Program. That waiver provides for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We're talking about people with Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, spina bifida, and under the age of 22, traumatic brain injury, an opportunity to access what we call a cap slot when we shorten it all down. That gives them respite for their families, which is critical. It also gives them home and community-based support so that they don't have to go into institutions. They can live in the community, which Olmstead Act has basically directed our state is the way to go for our community. It provides them with day supports. It also gives them supported employment so that these individuals can learn real job skills and go out and be a part of the community. And it helps them with transition services also. So this is critical to our state, and it's critical to this population.
For folks I'm sure listening probably are thinking now about the whole mental health reform issue and how this all sort of works. Where are we in terms of we've gone through a dramatic transition from who provides the services, who manages the services, how many local management entities or groups that oversee the services there are. Where are we now, do you think, in terms of actually addressing the needs of folks with intellectual or physical disabilities?
Right now, we are sitting at a precipice in our state where we have passed what many individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities feel, and rightfully so feel, one of the most detrimental bills that our state has seen, and that was House Bill 916, which expanded the managed care waiver system. Managed care is very much a medical term in the fact that for a person with an intellectual and developmental disability, there are going to be significant cuts to services. Just for example, Chris, currently in our state, 16,000 people with intellectual and developmental disabilities receive a service called targeted case management. Nationally, this is a best practice for this specific community. House Bill 916 takes that service away from 16,000 people. Nobody understood how huge an effect this was going to have. For so many individuals, a case manager is that one-to-one person that the family relies upon and that the individual relies upon. They write this thing called a person-centered plan where they actually sit down and meet with the family and talk to the family about the needs and the outcomes that the family and the individual want for themselves. That's going to be lost in this transition into managed care. What these individuals will have instead is a care coordinator. This care coordinator, from what we're hearing from the ground across the state, is making a lot of these in one-to-one interviews over the phone. You lose so much when you're doing it that way. It starts to look more like an insurance company's version of how to serve the public than actually being on the ground with the individuals and really assessing their needs and being there when they go into crisis. That is a huge jump from anything we have had in this state.
And is the rationale from folks who are doing that is that it saves money and it's more efficient? Is that the idea?
I believe, honestly, that the idea that we needed to go to a managed care system to manage a very big budget, Medicaid is a large portion of both our national budget and our state budget, was a good idea. I think that what happened as we moved forward was we didn't put all the correct voices around the table. We didn't really talk to the consumers as much as we should have. We didn't talk to the providers who have been doing this service on the ground for years since the original mental health reform back in 2001 started. We also didn't really comprehend that for an individual with an intellectual and developmental disability, this is a long-term care model that we need to be looking at. It's not just acute care. We are looking at individuals when you are born with Down syndrome. You have Down syndrome for the rest of your life. And through that life cycle, the families are going to need different support services. It's not a cookie cutter system. And what we are putting on top of them very much looks more like almost a rehabilitation model, which means that somehow they're going to be cured and not need these long-term supports. And that is totally counterintuitive to the community that I serve.
And so what happens now with this bill? I mean, where are we?
Well, right now where we are is Piedmont Behavioral Health is expanding into several different counties, and we're already hearing reports back about the difficulties in those counties. They're in the Piedmont area, so Cabarrus County. And then we are seeing Western Highlands up in our mountains in the Asheville area. They have gone online already, and they are having significant problems getting this up and running. And then the next group up will be in April, and that's East Carolina Behavioral Health. And some of the things that we're hearing out of that area also are quite distressing to our community. We at the ARC in North Carolina have asked legislators on both sides of the aisle in both chambers to slow this process down. We are trying to move from one system that has served individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities quite well, that could have been tweaked, that could have become managed care in a more efficient and safe manner. And instead, we're trying to change an entire system in 18 months. There is no way that we can successfully do this adjustment in 18 months without having significant consequences for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Is that something the ARC and others are seeking in May, in the short
session?
Yes,
we are seeking in May for legislators to do a full stop, to go ahead and allow Western Highlands to get on its feet and Eastern Carolina Behavioral Health to get on its feet because they are already in that transition mode and it's hard to pull them back. But at that point, what we would like to do is take a hard look at what we can do to create a managed care system that is really addressing the needs for long-term care. For example, this model has no benefit to our state if we're looking at really getting people out of institutions and into their homes in their communities. It has no medical home benefits built into it. There is no strong connection between this system for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities and CCNC.
Community care of North Carolina, yes.
Where we could actually assess, you know, their medical needs, provide them a strong medical home foundation, make sure that they have someone addressing, did they go to the dentist? Have they had their blood pressure checked? Because individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities are living longer. So their medical cares will be where, if we're looking to save money, we should be saving money. And we should be addressing preventive care for that community. What we have set up will not save money. The only way that you save money for an individual with an intellectual and developmental disability under this current system that we are about to go into is to significantly cut their budgets, and that will put the family into crisis.
Well, Julia, let's hope that doesn't happen. We appreciate all you're doing, and we appreciate you being with us.
Well, thank you so much.
That's it for another edition of the News and Views. Look for us on the web at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Chris Fitzsimon. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
You've been listening to News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon, Director of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com. News and Views, a weekly look at state and policy issues, is a production of the North Carolina Justice Center.